This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock, and coming up next, KBOO will present a live report from the Occupy ICE PDX protest in Southwest Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 31st Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 4th through July 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. Performing artists this year include Beth Hart, Robert Randolph and the Family Band, Ruthie Foster, and the Mavericks, as well as annual traditions like the Bill Rhodes Harmonica Blow-Off, Zydeco Dance Lessons, Blue Cruises, After Parties, and much more. Again, that's the 31st Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 4th through July 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
Love and I interested me so that I dared to knock at the door of the cosmos.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Solstice Celebration on Thursday, June 28th at 6:30 p.m. at EcoTrust in Portland. The Portland Solstice Celebration is a benefit party and open house in support of Rogue Farm Corps and their work training new farmers and preserving farmland. The event features live music, food and drinks, a raffle, and more. Again, that's the Portland Solstice Celebration on Thursday, June 28th from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at EcoTrust, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Now we're going live to the KBOO remote at the ICE PDX protest.
Tell me on the chat and just say live now. Yeah. Thanks.
this camp. And it's interesting for me because, walking in to this, I immediately compare it to the Occupy camp back in 2011, but it's very different from that. The Occupy was really basically about confronting the maldistribution of wealth and power in the United States. And the whole theme of the Occupy was something along the lines of, what if, what could we be, what could become? This, the tone here, and correct me if I'm wrong in this is enough. We can go no further with this sort of fascism. For example, on Democracy Now! Earlier this morning, Amy Goodman made reference to a report that children were being brought into a courtroom, little children, from outside the United States, separated from their parents, brought in a group into a courtroom, and a person who had been associated with the process had been saying that they were so small that it included a three-year-old who climbed on a table, completely oblivious, of course, being 3 years old, to the process, and that's how absurd that the process has become and how fascistic. And I imagine that feeds into the determination that I observe, that I feel, that I see in your face right now, actually.
Absolutely. Every day it makes me sick to my stomach to hear the stories, and even that is news to me now, this morning, hearing that. Where are the advocates for these kids? Who is beyond those lines taking care of them and making sure their needs are met and what's best for them is being taken care of? It's heartbreaking what these children are going through, and I think that when it comes to the process of getting them back with their families or even housed, I think they can do a whole lot better with that.
Do you feel that this process of zero tolerance has not been checked, that this occupation is therefore necessary to draw further attention to what is going on and to this this increasing, fascistization, I can't think of a better word, of American society?
Right. I think it's 100% necessary. We're going to keep going. I think this is something that there's other occupations popping up across the country, and I think that when people see people standing up, it gives them the confidence and the will sometimes to want to do the same thing. And I think it's going to take a lot more than just Portland to get that point across to the masses that feel like what's happening and these processes are okay.
I don't mean to be jonesing this interview.
I wanted to let people know, if you're just tuning in, that you're listening to KBOO. We are live from the Occupy ICE encampment and vigil outside of the ICE headquarters, 2410 Southwest McAdam Avenue. The camp has been going on since a week ago Sunday, so I guess 11 days or 12 days now that this has this movement began here in Portland, and as Danielle mentioned, has spread to other cities. Yesterday there were protests in Seattle, where Microsoft employees went to the headquarters of Microsoft demanding that the company drop its $19 million contract with ICE. In Brownsville, Texas, as we heard on Democracy Now! This morning, protesters actually went into the courthouse to try to stop the kangaroo courts, these mass trials and deportations of people without even hearing individual cases. So this is a growing movement, and despite what you may have heard about a crackdown yesterday and the way that the corporate media portrayed what happened yesterday, the camp remains strong and seems to be growing and is more powerful, in my opinion, than others, than ever before. If I look around, I know that there are issues with people getting their pictures taken here, but I can tell you what I see. There's an accessibility tent right across from us. That's a tent where they have cots for people who have mobility issues that maybe need need to lay on a cot. Also, first aid. There is a medical tent. There is a library of literature that you can get books, and there is a free kitchen where free food is distributed throughout the day, and there is a kids' tent with activities for the children that are here. So those are just a few of the things that I see looking around the camp. And Danielle, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about the kind of community that's being built here at the camp.
People have come together. We've got people bringing us food, any sort of donations that we need, medicine. We have an engineering tent as well. And people are coming and helping us build these walls and try to protect the camp. People in here, you got people from all walks of life. And I think the level of camaraderie and community here is really high. We've actually built what I like to call a little town, right in the middle of Portland, and it's working, it's thriving, it's happening. And I think the more people that come down and show support and stay here with us, the better. I think we need to raise even more awareness. Everyone here has been doing great, despite what they've been doing to us and what we've been going through. And the resistance against us from them.
And just a correction, the address here is 4310 Southwest McAdam. And there's a call out for people to come here. I know the yesterday people were saying, well, supplies are great, but we need more people to come and show support, whether it's for an hour or 2 hours or part of the day that you can make it down, or to be part of the night vigil. This is a 24-hour presence here, and I know in the wee hours of the night there is a need for people to be here and to be a presence as well, because that tends to be the time if the agents come out of the building, it tends to be at 4 or 5 in the morning generally harassment. I mean, I think this is the main purpose from what I've seen, not actually trying to prevent the camp from doing what it's doing, but to harass the campers. I mean, would that be your assessment as well, Danielle, as far as the needs right now?
Yes, I definitely agree. As far as them coming out in the wee hours of the morning, when they come out and they're looking at us and they're wearing these weird masks and they're dressing up these cardboard cutouts like that.
Dressing up cardboard cutouts?
Oh, God, you haven't heard. So they had Hulk Hogan dressed in an ice uniform.
What, outside or in the window?
In the window. There's also a guy, we now call him the infamous Eagle Head, because he puts on this big eagle mask. And he dances around and he waves at us. These are the sort of things that are happening to us. The
That's
night before
bizarre.
They came in, they played Metallica's song. I forget the name of it, but the lyrics were something to the scent of sleeping with one eye open and clenching your pillows. That blared through the garage over here. And these different things are very odd. And you just wonder, why are you doing this? And if you guys are taking these steps to mess with us, I don't even want to imagine what these children are going through behind closed doors that the public is not allowed to see.
Well, yeah. These are recognizable military psyops techniques, and this is all drawn up in manuals, and actually you can see this sort of behavior lined out, and it's part of the
COINTELPRO, right?
Yes, it's also straight up military action, and it's part of that whole, I was mentioning the AR-15 earlier, or a similar weapon, but it's part of this pretense that is done against dissent in the United States, and has been done so many times in Portland. We're so familiar with it, with the outrageously excessive armor and uniforms, and the idea, and it is effective. The idea is to come out with this massive military-like presence, and it gives people the impression it's just human nature to be afraid of what other people seem to be afraid of. It even works on dogs. If, if you want your dog to be afraid of something, act like you're afraid of it, and then you'll have a while unsticking your dog from that. But it works on people, and so this is, I've always found it to be quite dishonest, but it's very common, especially in the last 20 years, I've noticed that demonstrations simply, I mean, these are demonstrations, I was talking about Occupy, but so many actions, they are simply free speech actions, efforts to go around the buzz of the corporate media, and that's why KBOO is here. And they are very threatening, I think, to the powers that be, and so they have to get the majority of the population back on their side by pretending that, well, that y'all are dangerous, which is absurd.
Right.
And I've come into this camp. It's so quiet, so peaceful. There are tents lined up very neatly. People are walking respectfully. I see a lot of women here. I am transgender. My voice is baritone. So if you're listening on the radio, it may sound like a guy is talking to you, but a guy is not talking to you. And I walk into this camp, and it's very different from 2011, walking into the Occupy camp, and people would call me out because there were just all kinds of people there, and they'd say, are you a man or a woman, you know? And so I never felt safe, and frankly, that's why I didn't hang out. She saw a video of kids being herded like animals. That seems to be the limit. And again, it seems to be part of the theme that I feel here, not a theme that anyone just set openly and consciously, but just what people brought in their hearts, that this is heartbreaking. The situation cannot stand. Can I ask you to follow up on that? I mean, how do you feel in your heart about the situation?
Knowing that ICE exists and what they do was one level of anger and disappointment and heartbreak. But once I saw the visuals and heard the audio of these screams and these cries and some of these Asians making fun of these children and antagonizing them, there was a ball in the heartache and fight and camaraderie, sticking together. And, you know, all we want is for these children to be treated like the children that they are. They didn't ask to be born. They didn't ask to be born here or anywhere else. They don't have that choice. I just feel like there should be, again, more advocacy for these children. And since there isn't, we're here. And we're going to continue to raise awareness around this.
It brings to mind the words of the poet Roque Dalton, "Un manantial inagotable de mi furia," an unstoppable fountain of my fury. And that's why it's like a quiet fury that I feel around here. And that I'm seeing having an effect across the United States. I understand that as of today, one of the pieces of news that I encountered was that a section of ICE agents who are more specifically detailed to actually catching human trafficking, for example, have broken away and have made a public statement. I wonder if you've heard about this, that they wish for ICE to be abolished, which I thought was astonishing and quite an accomplishment for this protest. And so I come here and it's so quiet, and I see that it's just a simple action, basically, as I was saying, a demonstration. We're here. More people need to be here. Jenka was saying, if you are in agreement, if you're listening to me and you are in agreement with this sort of confrontation, then you need to be here for a couple of reasons. One is to increase the demonstration to show that people are still confronting this situation, and also to dilute the police power, because it is very easy for a very small group of people to be taken away, marginalized, locked mm-hmm. up, and that's that. But the more people actually come here, I mean, even for 5 minutes, changes the logistics and makes it less possible to actually crush the camp. So if you're listening and if you're in agreement, you may want to consider that. And if you're not in agreement and you come down and confront the camp, then unwittingly you're adding to the power of the camp. And I've seen people do that as well because it I hear again and again that there is a limit that has been reached. And on the other hand, and I'd be interested in your comments on this, Danielle, it seems to me that there is an effective fascist tactic in this, and is the same that has been seen before. For example, in Chile, that people know when they support the separation of families, they know when they support the no-tolerance policy, that they are doing the wrong thing, but they are doing the wrong thing in a group which they want to protect. And here I am talking about whiteness, and this is the thing that doesn't get talked about generally about the whole process here. The whole process with ICE is about whiteness. And I see a spider has come to join us. That's okay. He can hang out with me.
the joy is being outside. Here we are.
The thing is, I was just talking actually with a journalist about this yesterday. He referred to it as tribalism, but the tribe is whiteness, and the actions and the efforts of Trump through the ICE no tolerance policy is to keep basically non-white people from coming in and sharing in the status that white people enjoy in the United States. So I'd like to frame it in that and ask you, how does it affect you? The Trump administration, through these ICE actions, is becoming more and more blatant than never. And it's important, one of the most important aspects of whiteness is never to name it, of course. But they become closer and closer to actually saying, yes, we want a white apartheid state. Can you comment on that?
Can you clarify that a little bit more for me? I'm sorry.
Okay, so I'm talking about, and if you don't want to talk about that and you feel uncomfortable talking with a white person about that, I certainly understand. But I'm trying to frame what is here, what ICE does and what Trump is doing in terms of the enforcement of white hegemony in the United States.
I think it's disgusting. And I feel like as the POTUS, that shouldn't be the position he's taking. It shouldn't be the position anyone is taking, let alone the leader of our nation. I feel targeted. Racism being not having grown up, and it was a lot rougher to the blatant disrespect that's just seems to be the norm now. And yeah, it's just scary. It's really scary being a black woman in America right now.
And just was it 2 days ago, that police shooting a officer just out of the academy, not even a few hours out of the academy, shooting a person of color in the back as if he were a target in target practice.
Yeah.
That's the extent to which we've come, where that doesn't even raise the outrage. I mean, a year ago, people would be out in the streets. We're becoming even desensitized to the level of police violence that's going on, it seems. Can you talk about some of the connections between police violence against people of color here in the United States, and especially African Americans, black people in the United States, and this current struggle of people trying to come to the United States to flee violence in other countries?
I mean, having grown up here all my life, I've experienced that level of racism. And I understand, I'm not one to, I don't want to flee my country, but some people have it a lot worse than we do here when it comes to gang violence and corrupt government and things like that. I think it's really disgusting that for someone to want to come to a place and provide a better life for themselves or their families, I think it's terrible that that's a crime here. I think it's terrible, and that has to change. There has to be a way around criminalizing people for wanting to take better care of their children or have a longer life for their grandparents or their parents who are elderly and need better medical care. I think it's terrible they have to go through what they're going through.
Mike Pence was up before an international forum today calling for a cessation of immigration as if it were a terrible crisis in the United States, and that context that has driven people here is never brought up, and I would accuse big organizations like CNN, for example, and MSNBC of absolutely failing to provide the most basic concept, the most basic context, so that the American people can understand why people have been driven here. The reason, and if I may, the reason people are driven here is because of the American people. American people have turned a blind eye to the situation, for example, in Honduras, in Tegucigalpa, where the entire city is sat upon by a gigantic U.S. military camp, which calls all of the shots and which supports grotesquely violent totalitarian governments and which replaces popular governments with totalitarian governments just for the sake of convenience and, again, for the sake of that that whiteness and hegemony, which is even more obvious, more blatant once you get south. Month ago, the Dugger here never going to get back is so repulsive, and I see this. It is frightening because it's a critical moment. It works for the Trump administration. It works. The horror of it is intentional, and it works for their followers. So here is the opposition quietly determined, quietly setting up tents and facing down federal police and their war rifles. And I'm choking a little bit because, frankly, because I'm so impressed, because I'm blown away by the heart of the people who have come here. And I wonder, Danielle, if you could talk about what kind of people are here.
We have people here from all walks of life, all nationalities, many different orientations. And what makes that work and what connects us all is the will to have this policy, these policies change, these processes change, and just the simplest love for another human being. You know, we don't know these people, but they're human. And I think just wanting to be there for what we call our brothers and sisters is, I think, what is the single most important thing on everybody's hearts here is being there for these people, showing them support, letting them know that we're here for them, and showing them that we're here for them. And as long as we keep this going, I believe that we, you know, are supporting them and they'll have that. And hopefully that, you know, I don't want people to get discouraged. It's going to take some time, but we're here to fight, and it's a battle we've all chosen.
You know, being here at the camp and seeing what's happening, I have noticed a number of things. Like, a lot of times it's the most marginalized folks that are right at the front lines, people who maybe have the most to lose. I talked to a young woman who's a DACA recipient and who was out right at the front of the vigil because she said she's not going to be afraid anymore of being undocumented and being threatened with deportation, that she's going to take a stand. I've noticed a number of people who are disabled who are right at the front lines. Like Teresa, you were talking about being welcomed as a trans person. That's another thing, is people always ask for pronouns and are very supportive. And many of the people I've noticed here are either LGBT, trans people who are talking about those issues as well. People of color are mainly a lot of the people who are stepping up to the front lines. So I think as white people, it's time to take a lead from the marginalized communities and say, look at this. People are leading. It's time to follow. And or get out of the way, right? Lead, follow, or get out of the way. Another thing I've noticed is the mutual aid that's going on. So many people are going around picking up trash, taking the recycling out, asking people if they need anything.
Someone's paying for those porta-johns, too, I noticed, and that's an important thing.
There's porta-johns. I noticed at least one of them is being paid for by a union that is supporting the effort. And people, like someone just walked by with a full plate of hot food that was prepared in the kitchen. So there's breakfast and lunch and dinner that's prepared by volunteers here at the camp that go to the kitchen and prepare hot meals. So there's a mutual aid economy and society here. And what are the barriers to entry for anyone who, say, wants to come down and join this camp? Are there any restrictions on who can be here?
Well, no, not necessarily. We welcome everyone. We just want people to be safe and not come bringing trouble. That's not what we need. This is a fairly peaceful camp. You know, everybody gets along for the most part. So I would say bring your heart open and be ready for a community, because that's what we have here.
Mm-hmm. One question that's coming in from the chat is, if there are immigrants that have meetings, appointments set up at this building, what's happening to them during this period? Is it disrupting their process when this building is shut down?
So, no. While this building is shut down, they are going and doing business elsewhere. They're still doing their work somewhere else. These people are able to get access to that information when they come here, because for some reason they are being told that the place is still open, which that in and of itself is a harm, because if they need to be somewhere else and you're telling them this place is open and everyone knows it's not, that's very deceptive and foul. So we've done our best to direct everyone in the right direction. And we've had people come back and let us know for other families that might come and need to check in as well.
And I saw a sign that gave a number for people who need legal assistance, who maybe are coming to this building for an appointment with ICE. Has there been support for families who are facing proceedings, deportation proceedings, or other issues with ICE that the camp has provided?
People come and make donations all the time, every day. I believe there's also a GoFundMe set up for the aid of legal services, helping families with different things that travel from all over, that might need help with traveling back home or getting a document they might need, or childcare even. So yeah, there's resources available for them.
This, should we talk to this person? Are you?
Oh no, she.
Okay.
That's another KABU folk.
All right.
We've got our KABU crew here. We've got a good crew of folks that are helping put this together.
Sorry about that. Well, this puts me in mind again of the international situation, and I saw when I went to get my face done in Argentina, because it's cheaper. I went to Buenos Aires, and my partner Ani was with me. And while I was laying in a hotel bed dealing with blood loss, she went out and checked out the city. And one of the people that she ran into in the central square next to the Casa Rosada was Madres de los Desaparecidos. And these are the mothers of people whose families were separated, whose grandchildren were taken away under the U.S.-supported, U.S. logistically supported Operation Condor and the Dirty War in the 70s and early 80s. In Argentina and Chile and in South America. And all those years later, like decades later, these women are still looking for their children. Sometimes they'd find a child who would now be in middle age, who was separated as a baby. And what the fascists did with U.S. help was they would disappear leftists, and often as not just kill them, throw them from helicopters into the sea. And then they would take their children and... they had an official policy in which they said, well, we're going to bring these up as proper, right-wing people, and they put them with right-wing families and bring up their children to be anti-leftist conservatives. And, some of them are and some of them aren't, and some of them have discovered their status, and they're in their 30s and 40s and are, having to deal with that. But I bring that up because that's the sort of impact that this ugly sort of policy has. And of course, we've seen it in the United States over and over in terms of how we treat the indigenous people and, of course, the theft of people from Africa and the separation of those families. This is something that this camp wishes to put an end to. And, I have to hail that as certainly a worthwhile project, because the misery of that brutal act goes on and on for generations. I didn't leave a space for comments on that.
Well, I just want to point out, we're not able to take calls here at the camp, but what you can do is call KABU, and we will get that question then from the person who is running the board at KABU. So you can call in with any question that you might have at 503-231-8187. Again, that number, 503-231-8187. And the person in the air room at KABU can tell us your question, and we'll hopefully address that here at the camp. One of the things that you were just talking about the families that are coming for appointments and getting wrong information from ICE about where and when to come to their appointments. I just saw this week this press release from the Oregon State Bar that there's a Florida law firm that's been engaging in unethical immigration services, offering services to immigrant families here in Beaverton, and then requiring cash payments and then providing no legal assistance. So families are falling into this trap of looking for legal assistance from some shady companies that are around. This particular company is called Kular PA, and it's based in Florida, and yet they have an office open in Beaverton, and it looks like to lure people in order to extort them. So when you have a vulnerable population, people end up being susceptible to that type of situation where they can get more easily scammed or have people treat them unethically. So I think it's really important, the legal aid that you're saying that some lawyers have been able to provide to people. And I heard also...
Does PA stand for predatory a-holes in that case?
I don't know, but the ACLU was able to get into Sheridan, Oregon this week, the facility where 120 immigrants are being held for the first time. And that's been over a month that people have been without any access to legal aid. And so now the ACLU has been in there for the first time. And I think, it seems like this camp and these actions are putting pressure on to expose mm-hmm. these types of things that have been under the radar or not talked about. But now it's big headlines everywhere. What do you think is the impact of the work that's being done here?
I think we're definitely leaving footprints as we move forward. More and more people are coming and educating themselves. Again, sister occupations popping up across the nation. I think what we're doing here needed to happen. And I'm glad that other people were able to put things together in their state or their town where they are, so that it can continue to spread and continue to manifest itself into the minds of people who just close their minds off to things. You know, you get people driving by here and they just yell things like, go get a job, or, go home, without even reading a sign or asking why we're here. And some of those very same people actually come back and want to talk. And once we explain to them what this building is and what they are putting people through, they're very apologetic and seem to break themselves down to what's going on. So many people are above it. It's easy to just drive by and not pay attention, or turn your TV off and not pay attention. So little by little, it's getting to people, and I think that's what needs to happen.
Interesting.
I would like to see these DHS agents out front here drop their badges and armor and cross the yellow line on to our side.
That would be human. Something. Well, evidently, some of them are, nationally are doing that. I want to describe the scene here again. Right now, the sunlight's coming gently onto the mixer board here. This is a quiet scene, a row of tents, and where we are physically, let me explain. If you look at the Portland skyline and just south, you'll see the cable car, the $55 million funicular, the world's most expensive carnival ride, and this camp is just south of that. Mm-hmm.
It's actually the best way to get here is by the streetcar. Yeah, take the streetcar to the Southwest Moody turnaround at the end of the line at the waterfront, and the camp is just ahead at the end of Moody Avenue.
A lot of people are familiar with this. So it's actually at the corner of Bancroft and McAdam, and a lot of people are familiar with that, with Bancroft as the street they turn to get to the spaghetti factory, which is down at the other end of the street.
But you can't go down Bancroft right now. The ICE officers or the Department of Homeland Security officers have that entrance closed, but you can't come down Moody Avenue, Moody and Bancroft.
Or Bond.
Yeah, or Bond. And we have a question from Diana, who wants to know if there's an opportunity for people with historical knowledge to use this protest as a teaching moment.
Absolutely. You can't have too much knowledge out there. Like, we want people to come educate themselves. It's great for someone to come down and bless us with some education. Knowledge is power, and I feel like there's strength in numbers. So the more we know, the further we can go.
Yeah, one of the things I found really moving about the Brownsville, Texas protest where the number of teachers that were out, and Amy Goodman this morning was interviewing a number of teachers who were talking about how the public school system is kind of the last refuge where anyone can come, regardless of your status. You can come to the public school and get an education, and that is a wonderful thing and should be spread to other institutions. But yet people are afraid, and so many students and young kids are living in terror that their family might be torn apart. And I know that you said that is something that moved you to take action, Danielle. Maybe you could talk about what particularly made you decide to take a really committed action and stay here at the camp, and not just come out for an hour or two, but to say, no, I'm devoting myself to this for a while.
My bottom line is because I'm a mom. And I couldn't imagine having my children taken away from me and put through the horrors and the trauma that these children are going through. And I sat at home and I watched some of that footage and I heard some of that audio and I just held my babies.
Mm-hmm. I think it hit so many people on that level. I remember being forced away from my six-year-old by the courts, and that was the first thing that hit my mind when I heard that audio. My child crying, and I'm breaking up too. It's really hard to express this.
It's heartbreaking, you know. You think about the families. It touched so many people. I think this is what has led to this breaking point. There have been so many stories of people being deported, hundreds of people killed at the border, dying crossing the border. But the one thing that then made it hit this breaking point was when these stories and this footage came out of these families being torn apart, children being torn from their parents. I mean, it's just something that I think touches so many people at a level that we as a country, people are saying across the country, we can't take this anymore, that this is not okay, and this is not our values. Maybe this is something that the United States has historically done to families, but this is not what we as individuals, as communities, believe in.
We're not going to stand for it.
And people have taken a stand, and it is spreading across the U.S. There is a question of how many occupying camps are currently taking place across the U.S. I personally am not sure. I don't know if Danielle, if you have gotten information from other camps. I know in Tacoma, Washington, Marumora Villaponda has been an organizer up there for a long time, and they have taken the protest to SeaTac, the Seattle Tacoma Airport, where they're detaining people, and some of the parents have been taken from Texas and brought to Tacoma, Washington. So I know that this Portland camp is in solidarity with the Tacoma camp and also with Los Angeles. But there's been a number of people in Los Angeles that have faced down federal police there. Do you know of other camps?
I heard there was an occupation being put together for New York, and some things in Texas. Mm-hmm. I don't get much news from the outside.
Yeah, you're focused on the what's happening here at the camp.
Yes, but I'm hearing about them. I'm just not able to sit down and keep track myself.
Yeah. So right now at the camp, I just want to again describe for listeners what's happening. I saw probably a dozen officers, and these are, I don't know if they are Department of Homeland Security officers or if they are private security that then were hired by Department of Homeland Security to wear those uniforms and be stationed outside. They're not, arm-to-arm protecting the entrance to the building. They're, probably about 5 feet apart from each other, and they're not in a tight line or anything looking like they're going to attack the protest or anything. They are basically at the edge of the property line of what the building that ICE is renting. And next to that is where the camp is located. And the camp is on TriMet property. And so far, TriMet has said this is okay because we have lifted the camping ban here in Portland and across the city. People have supposedly been allowed to camp. I know a lot of houseless people would challenge that and say, wait, they've been harassed and they've had their camp dismantled and this kind of thing. But it is on a piece of land that isn't owned by the same owner as that property. So the ICE agents have, or the Department of Homeland Security agents have been kind of kept into that area and not been crossing the line. So another thing is it's very peaceful in the camp. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful morning. People are serving breakfast, and there's a very peaceful feel here at the camp itself. So just across the line that the agents have set, they might seem somehow menacing or taking their stance. But on the other side of the line, there's a whole different feel, and I think people need to look at it themselves before judging. So just to talk about a little bit more about what is happening here at the camp today, and what people could expect to see if they came.
We're carrying on its business as usual. There are still agents outside of camp in front of the ICE building. They try to look scary and intimidating, but they're not. I actually spend quite a bit of time trying to talk to them. Human to human, they don't say anything. It's interesting to see how trained they are to act like they don't care. Some of them are so stone cold they'll say, "I don't care." The one asked my daughter how she was doing yesterday, and she said, "I'd be fine if those kids were free." Do you not care about the kids? Shakes his head no. You know.
Taking the lead of First Lady Melania Trump, or was it the daughter? One of the Trumps.
It was Melania with her jacket that said,
I don't care.
What a bizarre.
It's that attitude is what infects a lot of brains, and so I just want to penetrate that. I want people to know that we're not out here to yell and cuss at DHS officers. The conversation, dialogue, an open mind with these people. I really do believe that these people are listening. And I just hope that when they go home at night, that they reflect on some of the conversations they've had with people here and some of the things that they've heard from people who speak here. And utilize that to have a change of heart, and let that give them strength, because even them, like, we would be here if it were their children too. We would be here if it was them. We're not against them. You guys are human beings just like us, and you got to treat the people in your care like the human beings that they are.
Interesting story. My own father was a Capitol Police officer in his early 20s in Washington, D.C., and was asked to stop demonstrations and to stand at demonstrations in 1968, and left the administrator. In point, these things...
I do. I think
verbally, this is Danielle. Idea of what you're about. I can self confident. It's a very peaceful place. I was saying earlier that if you do support the aims of the camp, then it's very, very useful for you to actually come down here and be here physically, just to dilute the enforcement and also to increase the power of the demonstration. And this is evidently, from what I can see, this is coming from love. This is coming from a desire to promote human rights and not from a love of confrontation or out of anger. There's a lot of anger here, but the anger is secondary. And what I perceive, and actually what you can hear, or maybe what you can hear in the silence around me, is people quietly determined to make this happen, to make the American people see confront and actually deal with what they are doing through the Trump administration and this zero tolerance policy. And there's so much more to say about it. But it seems to me like we're getting up towards the top of the
hour. We're getting up to the top of the hour, and we are going to be here for another hour. So we've got the show coming up is going to be Valley Views. It's going to be from 10 to 10:15. And then we will be here at Occupy Portland until 11 a.m. So if you want to come down, again, it's 4310 Southwest McAdam Avenue. Come on the Moody Street side on the streetcar or just come on the waterfront side. And if for those who can't make it, the website to support the camp is gofundme.com/OccupyIcePDX. OccupyIcePDX is also a hashtag to follow on social media. KBOO is here live on Facebook and on Twitter when we're not live on the air. So you can check KBOO's Facebook and Twitter for updates as well. And we're going to be wrapping this hour up and going to Valley Views with Dale and Corvallis. And then we're going to be back live from the Occupy ICE encampment. So again, this is the KBOO tent here at Occupy ICE. And look for us if you're down at the encampment. And if you're not down here, then check it out. And if you can't, GoFundMe.com, Occupy ICE, PDX. So we're going to go back to the air room now, and we'll be back in about 15 minutes.
Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you.
And thank you, Teresa and Jenka. You've been listening to KBOO's live report from the Occupy ICE PDX protest in Southwest Portland. The time now is 10 o'clock, and coming up next is Valley Views.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Cherry Blossom Orchestra on Wednesday, June 27th at 8 p.m. at the No Vacancy Lounge in Portland. The evening centers on the historic performance of Jansen Hop, a piece of music written in Portland in 1931, to be performed at Jansen Beach's Golden Canopy Ballroom. It was never recorded. The night also features a 90th birthday tribute for Louis Armstrong's West End Blues and much more. Again, that's the Cherry Blossom Orchestra on Wednesday, June 27th at 8 p.m. at the No Vacancy Lounge, 235 Southwest 1st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.